Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
We have another great show for you this week. We caught up with the one and only Eamon Dunphy to get his thoughts on everything that's happening, mostly Liverpool, to be fair. And also we spoke to Victor Costello about Ireland taking on Italy in the Six Nations. Declan Drake had all your GAA news, and Alan Cawley gave us the roundup on the League of Ireland. Download the show now, wherever you find your podcasts.
You'll be delighted when I go back, won't you?
Ah, no, it was great having you around. You had a bit of a tough week, though, hadn't you?
Yeah, a bit of a tough week. Poor old Joe Cosgrave from the Cosgrave brothers, and of course, son of the late great Jack Cosgrave. He used to own Jason's.
Oh yeah,
Joe's son sadly passed away last week, and his funeral was yesterday out in the Radisson, and. Yeah, it was a sad occasion. It was very sudden. And he was a great lover of snooker, a great lover of sport, you know. Loved the rugby, loved the football. But of course, you know, gave me that room out in the Radisson, you know, the snooker room. Got all the photographs up. And he was quite funny because we had some great opening nights there. And, you know, he got all the photographs from Jason's. And he'd come into the snooker room and he'd go, oh, there's a space there. We'll get another photograph there, right? And there's no more spaces left, right? So... He says to the guy, you know, the handyman in the hotel, he says, now start putting the pictures on the ceiling, right? So there's three photographs that are drilled to the ceiling, like, you know what I mean? He just absolutely loved it. And he loved the history of Jason's and stuff like that. But, you know, very, very sadly. And he was very successful in the building trade and that, Cosgrave Developers.
Of course, yeah.
Very successful company, and just passed away very suddenly. And it was a big turnout in Mount Merion there yesterday, and of course back to the Radisson as well, you know. So sad week, you know. He was a great guy,
absolutely, way too young, so our condolences go to all of his family and to you as well.
Talking about the Radisson though, I had of course the Lions were out there, they were playing Leinster. They've been out there all week, like having a great week out there, you know.
It's great for the South African teams, this whole URC and coming up here, like it's something they would never have had the opportunity to do before, a lot of those players, because those franchises, they're good in the sense that they give young South African players an opportunity to play the game professionally and all that. But a lot of it was within the country, so they didn't travel all that much. And the only real travelling was going on was with the really big franchises, but also with South African team itself. So you never got a chance to go outside the country. But now since the URC came along, these lads are getting a great opportunity. Imagine what a crack that is, because they come for weeks and then so they play a number of matches to avoid the costs of the travelling up and down and up and down. So like they'll come and they'll play here and then they'll play a couple of other games.
Yeah, I think they played Ulster, didn't they?
I think they played Ulster, was it last week? It is last week that they or maybe they're to play Ulster, I'm not quite sure, but they were playing against the Stormers, of course, are playing Connacht today. That's in the sports ground, so they're over as well. But the Lions, they actually got on better than I thought last night. I thought they'd get hammered, to be honest with you, because they tend to struggle when they travel up this part of the world.
But I tell you what, they were enjoying their week in the Radisson. They were absolutely loving it. They're crap at snooker, by the way. But they only play pool, they said, over there, you know. But they were in watching. I was in there doing a bit of practice, and there was about five or six of them. It was the biggest crowd I played in front of for a long, long time, you know. And they were quite big as well. They were big lads, like, you know. But they loved it.
There's no question. It's plenty of size. They have huge forwards usually and very fast backs. That's kind of wasn't it? I watched that game last night. Leinster were... they weren't as good as they should have been, really. They made a lot of mistakes. They got the job done. They won by 8 points, I think it was, in the end. 21-13, if I'm not mistaken. So they got the job done, Leinster, but they kind of made hard work of it. They made an awful lot of errors, mistakes that you wouldn't normally see Leinster teams making, dropping balls, bad passes. That kind of carry on. But look, they got the job done, and there was a lot of young Leinster players getting their opportunity with all of
that. So, that's good.
The Irish team is pretty much Leinster as it is. So, a lot of young lads were getting opportunities last night. So, that was good. And Connacht, as I said, are taking on the Stormers later on today. So that'll be an interesting one in the sports ground. The Stormers now would be a stronger team than the Lions, so Connacht won't have it quite as easy as Leinster had it last night, although it wasn't that easy in the end. But
Yeah.
So
that's what I was saying. Like, so you play this game, you get money to play this game. And you win the World Championship. When was that? 25 years ago. Oh, I was on a barn then. Yeah. Oh, thanks very much.
They are very young. Yeah. I know, when I'm commentating the matches now, I'm looking at dates of birth of the 90s and I'm kind of going, what? But how could he be born in the 90s? Sure, and still, I mean, playing rugby now. Yeah.
Making me debut then.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it's actually up to the noughties now, believe it or not. You're getting lads born in 2000 playing, you know, you're going, oh, no, this is all wrong.
We're getting old, Reg.
Really, really all wrong.
You don't look your age, Reg, though, in all fair. You used to.
At least 10 years older. I get there before you, don't worry. Long before you.
Great to have Dunphy on the show, though. I'm looking forward to speaking to Eamon, and I rang him the other night, and he's in good spirits. You know, he's been isolating, of course, because of the COVID, and he's a little bit worried of COVID because he suffers from emphysema. He's always forthright in his opinion, and that's what we love.
That's what we want. That's what this show is all about, not holding back, so we're looking forward to that. United during the week, what do you think?
I thought they actually did well. I didn't fancy them at all. No. And when they went 1-0 down after 7 minutes, I thought, oh, here we go, you know?
The form coming into it had been pretty poor, to be honest with you. They weren't really playing great.
They were getting results, but not playing.
Yeah, not playing.
Yeah. You know, leaking goals.
Against Atletico, you thought they were going to be in serious trouble. Like.
But they got out of it with a 1-1 draw. I mean, incredible. I don't know how they got away from it.
I know.
And, you know, so I'd be interested to hear what Eamon says. He's a big Liverpool fan, of course, you know, so he'd be gloating over the way they're playing. Of course, they'd be
I can't believe that. I mean, I last week we were chatting, and like, I'm pretty sure there was 9 points in it last week, and then all of a sudden it's down to 3 because of the flip last week and the game in hand. I can't believe it's down to 3. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. It makes
actually,
a really good.
You're not going to play Watford today at home, but the next match next week is against Man City.
All right, okay.
Away, yeah, in the Etihad.
Huge.
So big Manchester derby. It's next weekend.
Right, okay, looking forward to that. That'll be a cracker.
They've got 3 tough games, actually. They've got Man City away, Liverpool away, and then Tottenham at home, I think. And then, of course, your team, Arsenal, won. Did you watch that game? My God, what a finish.
Like I said,
what a finish.
No, unbelievable. I was looking at it going, how can we be that poor? But we were lucky. We were blessed, you know. But I mean, it was great. Take it. 96 minute or something like that. You take that, no problem.
I think they've got a great chance of getting fourth now.
Yeah, no, honestly, it's been quiet this year. There's been no talk. Everybody's just kind of shut up about Arsenal. That's fine. Arsenal are happy enough to do it. Arteta seems to be going along steady, and bang, next thing is we're pushing hard on that fourth slot, making it solid. That would be an amazing result after the last few years. It really would.
It wouldn't be good for us United fans.
No, it wouldn't be, but it'd really be good. You know, to see what happens and then see who we get after that, you know, so that'd be interesting.
You've got Victor for the rugby event.
Oh, yeah. The rugby's on tomorrow. I'm looking forward to that. Going to bring the kids to that one. And it's their first Six Nations game, so they're very excited about it.
Very good.
Looking forward to it. I managed to beg, borrow, and steal to get tickets for it because it's, you know, Six Nations match. It's impossible to get tickets for them. Yeah, they're stupid money as well. But anyway.
All your connections.
I get 2 tickets. I'm entitled to buy 2 tickets, but that's it. And of course, I do have connections. But like everybody has connections, and everybody's looking for the tickets, and there's limited numbers, and they all want to go to it. So, but we got there anyway. So I have the tickets organised for tomorrow. So they're really excited and looking forward to that.
Do they roll out for the ex players and stuff? Like, what do they do for ex players? Regarding
there is a room there for ex players. Yeah, can you
bring your kids in there? And stuff?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean. You could. I mean, technically you only get 2 wristbands, you know. So
yeah.
I'd have to get one to stand on your shoulders and put a big coat on them. Where are you?
Well, you could block out any kid anyway, so you'd be all right.
I could put 2 of them in my jumper. So, they're good.
Oh, but that's good. That's
good. Yeah, and you get to meet up with a few of the old
so
lads now.
So is that for every home match, is it?
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
There's an ex-player's tent, it's a room. It used to be a tent.
That's good. Like, we don't do that. Like, in snooker...
Well,
we have a player's room, but it's so difficult trying to get passes, and we're only allowed 2 passes each. It's hard, like, trying to get people in, like, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, well, it was kind of a bit of a battle for a few years to get it, but the Irish Euros always did that ex-internationals tent, and as I said, you can buy the tickets. You don't get given them now, you buy the tickets. But, you know, it's good to have that option to buy them. But all the rugby clubs get their tickets, so if you're a member of a club, you get tickets, but they're expensive, Ken. I won't lie to you. Like, they're £125 for a ticket for any of the big games.
No,
I think it's down to
£125.
Yeah.
And what about for your kids and that?
Yeah, well, full price.
Jeez, yeah. That's
now today is Italy, or tomorrow is Italy, so it'll be, I think the tickets are £80 or £90.
Yeah.
But for England, France, Scotland, they're between £110 and £125. So it's not cheap.
That's mental.
Yeah, it's not a cheap day out. I mean, there's a lot of people giving out. I see the Welsh Union actually in the paper yesterday. I was reading it. They are complaining because it's £120 for the Wales game,
wow,
and all the tickets are available. You can see the Millennium Stadium.
That's,
they put up a
expensive
screenshot of it. There's hardly any of them being sold,
yeah,
and they're talking about how Welsh Union is such and such problems over there financially, but they're taking it out on the fans and charging that kind of money, because England, I believe, was £67 for a game at Twickenham.
That's more reasonable.
Reasonable price, yeah, yeah, exactly, reasonable price.
Yeah.
But Wales are charging £120. I think it's coming back to bite them in the ass.
If you were
bit
going to the World Championship, you know, £40 maybe.
30, really?
Yeah, £30-40.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And what about the final? Would that be right up there?
Final might be £70.
Jesus, that's cheap for a big event.
It's very cheap,
like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And don't get me started about World Cup tickets.
You're
talking sort of minimum €200 for a ticket for that.
Wow. Well, crazy. People are getting ripped off these days.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Big time. Yeah, big time.
It is ridiculous.
We could do a whole show on that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
we don't have much time.
We don't have time.
Anyway, that was Dublin's Talking Sport.
Yeah, make sure you tune
Thanks
in.
Thanks very much
week
for tuning in.
Reg and Ken will be giving out about the price of league tickets and bus fares. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break.
The Daniel Day-Lewis, how much is it to get on there?
Exactly. All right.
Morning, Reggie. How are you?
Morning, Eamon. We're great. We're great in here, Eamon. Never better. Good to have Ken in studio with us. How's life with you?
Everything is good, thank God. I'm safe and well.
Yeah.
And my team, Liverpool, are probably going to win the Premier League.
Don't start gloating already. Don't start gloating.
Happy. It's a bit early to be gloating, Ken, but still, we had a good night on Wednesday against Leeds, 6-0,
yeah,
and we're looking forward to the Manchester United game.
Well, I tell you what, it's amazing. Reggie and I were just talking. It's amazing. It looked like the league was over a few weeks ago, and now all of a sudden there's only like 3 points in it. It's going to be a really close race now, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah. I mean, it's you know, Liverpool have to play City. It's in Manchester, but
yeah,
they look a very powerful team at the moment. They have no injuries, which they did last year. Mm. And they have a new player,
Diaz.
Yeah, he looks really top class. So Liverpool are in great shape for the Champions League and for the Premier League, and of course they have the Carabao Cup final on Sunday against Chelsea. So it's a very exciting time for Liverpool fans. Of course, I know for you as a Manchester United fanatic, I mean, Liverpool are fans, United are fanatics. So it's a difference.
Listen,
you
wait
know?
Until we go to Anfield, you know? That's what they
We're
sing.
Terrified.
That's why they sing. You know why they sing, "We'll Never Walk Alone in Liverpool"? Because if you were in Liverpool, you'd never walk alone there at night time. You know that, don't you?
I think that's a slur on the city. And I'm going to report you to the broadcasting authority.
I'm only joking. I love Liverpool. And I love the banter with the Scousers. You know, they're great. They're fantastic, you know. But it's going to be really close, actually. You know, I'm really... And close at the bottom as well, and close for four.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the most exciting sort of years in football, isn't it?
Yeah,
never. It is. I think it's the best Premier League ever.
Yeah.
And the quality of the teams and the quality of the coaches. I mean, the money's in England, and, you know, the great players and the great coaches follow the money. So, this is an amazing time for the Premier League. Really, the best players in the world are there, you know.
A quick story. I heard about Jurgen Klopp, you know, when he went there to Anfield. And he lined all the staff, you know, the security, all the catering staff up in the canteen. And then he brought all the first team in. And he went down the first team, Henderson, Salah. He says, "Do you know that lady's name?" And he says, "No, no." He says, "I know her boss, but I don't know her name, you know. Do you know this security guy's name?" "No, no." All the first team didn't know any of the canteen staff's first name or security.
Yeah.
And he says, "You've got a week to know every single one of these by their first name. Otherwise, you're going to be fined a week's wages, you know." And all the staff loved him for that. And also, it created a sort of a siege mentality within the club, you know. And it's amazing what a man sort of... what a manager he is, and what a man manager he is, you know.
Yes, and you do need the spirit in the club. And funny enough, I was at Manchester United for 5 years, and it was one of the things Matt Busby was very keen on.
Yeah.
And there was ladies in the laundry and smaller staff, obviously, in those days.
Yeah.
But everyone was on first name terms, everyone was respected part of the club. Yeah, it was a hugely important thing.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about money there, Eamon, and everything else that goes along with it in the Premier League. I'm just interested now with everything that's happening internationally. Do you think it's going to get filtered down into the Premier League? There's a fair bit of Russian money filtering in through there.
Well, I think it will. I don't think we're going to go back to the way things were. Interestingly, Thomas Tuchel was asked at the press conference yesterday if it was right to take the Champions League away from St. Petersburg.
Mm.
And he didn't hesitate. He said, yes, it was right. Now, given who his boss is, that was a very brave answer. And of course, it is right that the Champions League was taken away from St. Petersburg, which is Putin's home city.
Yeah.
But Tuchel was unapologetic and very straightforward, and it was hugely admirable. I do think that there is Russian money, and of course, most spectacularly with Chelsea. I don't think we're going to go back to normal with this Russian regime. So, it could have an effect, and it's a small price to pay for the liberation of Ukraine if we get to there.
I was just looking in the papers today, Eamon. It's 50 years to the day when Pele played in Daly Mount against the League of Ireland 11. 50 years of the great Pele. Do you remember much about that at all?
I were not sure I was in the country 50 years ago. I may have been still in England, but I certainly saw Pele play at Hillsborough against Sheffield Wednesday, and of course I met him too when he came here. The late Louis Kilcoyne brought him here, and I had the pleasure of meeting him. He was absolutely charming, and of course he was one of the great players of all time. And
not as good as Ronaldo not as good as Ronaldo.
Oh, I think he might have been a bit better than Ronaldo. He had a more all-round game, shall we say. But to be fair to Ronaldo, Ronaldo has proved himself to be, one of the great players of all time as well. And you can't differentiate between them.
No.
Like Messi, Pele, and Ronaldo would probably be the three greatest players of all time.
Maradona,
but they were all different.
Maradona you'd have to put in that mix.
Oh, you would, absolutely. Absolutely. And George Best, really. As well.
We were looking at an old photograph for the time you brought George Best down to the Piro Snooker Club all those years ago. And I still have that picture on my wall
I remember that. Yeah, it was lovely. And he was very obliging indeed. And it was a great moment. Two greats together.
Yeah.
You and him.
No, I was in the middle. You and him.
Good times.
Yeah.
Eamon, just with the Champions League as things stand at the minute and having a look at the teams, I mean, I was a bit surprised, I'll be honest with you, United getting the 1-1 draw away to Atletico. I thought they'd get beaten. But who do you see kind of pushing towards the title, standing out a bit more, most of all at the moment?
I think Liverpool are the best team in Europe, Reggie, and I'm not saying that because I'm a Liverpool supporter. I just think they can hit you in so many ways. They have Mo Salah, who is really a really great player now, probably the best player in the world at the moment. They have Van Dijk. They have everything, really. They're in all the competitions. They're fit. They have Mane, Salah. I mean, someone like Firmino can't get in the side now. So they have everything. And City, Manchester City, obviously, with their record, are, you know, a really outstanding team as well. So they might be, they're clearly the two teams fighting out the Premier League, but they may well be the two teams, if they don't meet beforehand, fighting out the Champions League final in Paris. And they are, you know, two great coaches and two great sets of players. Now, I think, and I think just City don't have a striker. They don't have a Mo Salah. And all around the pitch, I think Liverpool are probably a better side. We'll find out, because they play in the first week in April at the Etihad. And we'll see. That's the key match in the Championship. I think Liverpool are just ahead of them. Just the sheer weight of talent, Alexander Arnold, Robertson, the two fullbacks. If anything, in midfield, Liverpool may be just a little short. But then, City don't have a striker. And they don't really have a great midfield player. They don't have a player that can dictate the tempo of a game in the way a Roy Keane could, you know. But they all, as a team, pass the ball, movement is great. They have Bernardo Silva, they have Sterling, who's playing very well now. They're a very good goalkeeper, a very good defence. So that'll be a hell of a game, and it'll be between those two, the big prizes, I think.
PSG or the other team that I had in mind, but I just don't think Messi's not firing there at all. They don't seem to have that.
No. He was very poor. No, PSG are just a, they're really a kind of one-man team. Neymar is never fit. He never plays. They actually lost in the French league last week, which is hard to do. Messi's not really, I don't think he's happy in Paris.
No, he was very poor.
He was very poor.
Real Madrid, Eamon, do you see anything from them at all?
No. They just haven't got the players, Ken. They're a great manager, Carlo Ancelotti. I watched the game against PSG, and no, they just don't have the quality really anywhere at the back. Ramos is gone. Varane is gone. Benzema up front, who is a great player, but he was had a groin strain. He played. They had to play him when he was half fit. So no, Real Madrid, no. Barcelona have gone altogether. Europa League. But the obvious danger to Liverpool would be Bayern Munich. Lewandowski is having a fantastic season. They're a very good team. Yeah, they're the danger, I think, in the Champions League.
Ah, sure, it sounds like Liverpool have it all wrapped up. There's nobody else there. It's handy as handy.
Well,
listen, Eamon, we don't want you coming on this show talking about Liverpool all the time, right? We want to talk about the big match today against Watford, Manchester United.
I wish I had time to let you talk about that. Unfortunately, I'm right out of it, though. But we'll catch up with you very soon. And I love
we were talking about Manchester United for the 30 years, Ken. It's payback time.
Exactly. You're dead right. All right.
Okay, guys.
Thanks, Eamon.
Time for football now, that I'll be joined by the one and only Alan Colley. Morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reg. How are you?
Morning, Alan.
Morning, Ken. How are we?
We're all good. Looking forward to a great weekend of sport again, as always. It's been hectic over the last week, football-wise. But last night, there was some interesting games and stuff as well. So I suppose we'll start with the League of Ireland, Alan. And we'll start with that draw between Bowes and Dundalk. Probably one that Bowes would have felt they could get a victory in. But 2-2, cracking match.
Sounds like a cracker, all right, Reggie. 2-2, as you say. Bowes, who didn't play last week, so we were a little bit in the unknown with them in terms of they lost a good few players, obviously, and some new players. So we were interested to see just how they would fare. I'm going in to watch them on Monday night. They're playing St. Pat's. But their first game back in Daly Mount, first game of the season, a 2-2 draw. They probably will be disappointed because they were ahead. But Dundalk seemed to be very much the same, obviously, in terms of them being in transition, as we spoke about last week. And they obviously got off to a 2-2 draw against Derry last week. So I think Dundalk, by the looks of things, after the first two games, could be a good team to go and watch. But in terms of them challenging or being kind of up near the top, I can't see it with Dundalk. Bowes, on the other hand, as you say, I'm interested to see what they'll be like on Monday. But Keith Long, I'd say he's probably disappointed with a 2-2 draw home, especially with them being ahead.
Alan, you were right. We were talking last week about Derry City and the money that's being pumped into them. And you know, you're right what you were saying. It could be a danger this year. Great win for them against Shamrock Rovers. Last minute goal by McGonagall in the 90th minute as well. Sealed the win there.
Yeah, we're up here, Ken, obviously we're covering the game last night and it was a brilliant win, and there is great kind of optimism and hope around, huge anticipation before the match, obviously because of the signings Derry had made and the recruitment and the investment from the chairman, as we spoke about last week. So it was a good test for them last night to see where they are against the champions, but they matched them in every department. And as you say, an unbelievable goal to win it with McGonagall, who played really well on the night. And they were missing a couple of their new signings as well. Michael Duffy didn't play. Patrick McElhenney only came on. So definitely the signs are very bright for Derry City at the moment. And there was great scenes after the match when obviously they got the winner. Yeah. There was bad scenes on the other hand as well, Ken. I'm not sure if the cameras pick it up, but some disgraceful scenes with fans coming on the pitch fighting. And I have to point that out as well, because as much as we want to try and promote the league and we speak about it every week and it is on a sound footing, we can't get to a stage where people feel as though they can be jumping over barriers and going on the pitch and fighting on the pitch and everything. It looked desperate. It looked really bad.
Yeah, absolutely. And the clubs will need to take action to stamp that out. And I suppose, first and foremost, identifying those people and trying to take action against. It's not easy, you know, but I mean, and it's hard. It always goes back on the club, but they've got to take the responsibility, I suppose.
Well, the problem is with that, Reggie, they have to take responsibility and call, and their own supporters even need to call out to people, because the good supporters are being tarnished by a minority, a few idiots, and people will know who these idiots are. So I think it is. I think the responsibility does lie with the clubs, and they have to call them out, because, as I say, there's plenty of good supporters involved in all clubs, but there is idiots who tarnish everybody, and that's what's going to happen. They end up getting a bad name, the club, being associated with idiots like that who feel as though they can jump on a pitch and be doing all sorts of things, really. Like, I know the cameras probably didn't pick it up, but it was desperate. And I feel as though we have to call it out as well, because for us who obviously want to promote the league and love the league so much, we can't have it both ways. If there's something wrong as well, we have to call that out.
Absolutely.
There's no room in the game for that, is
there? No, it needs to be dealt with, and I'm sure it will be. Pats, a bit disappointing result for them last night, going down 2-1 to Sligo. That would be a bit of a shock.
Yeah, it was, Reggie. Yeah, I didn't see that coming, because obviously Sligo lost their two best players in the off-season as well. Didn't really recruit all that well, but one of their signings that they did bring in, Aidan Keane, by all accounts had a great game last night, and it was a huge win for them, because of course Sligo didn't play last week either. Pats having the two games under their belt, one in the President's Cup and obviously beating Shelburne, and that was their first home game, so they would have been really looking forward to that. But to lose 2-1, I'm sure Tim Clancy would be bitterly disappointed with that result.
A good win for Duff as well, though. His first win, Shelburne 2-0 against Strada.
He's up and running, Ken. The Dovster is back.
I wonder, did he do that celebration that he did in Seoul? Do you remember that he did that when he scored out there?
Well, how funny would it be if you ran on the pitch and did that someday?
It
was a great win for them, because difficult place to go. Now, again, Drogheda didn't play last week, so that was their first game. They did lose 4 or 5 players in the off-season, very good players. So very much in the unknown with them also. But considering Shelburne had that disappointing defeat, the best way to bounce back and get a win, and it's his first win under his belt now, and as I say, he's up and running. So great result for Shelburne.
Moving across the water, we were talking to Eamon Dunphy a little bit earlier on the show, and he's in unbelievable form because of the fact that Liverpool are doing so well. Now, I have to admit, we didn't see it coming last week. And all of a sudden, this league has taken on new life with only 3 points between City and Liverpool. And Eamon thinks it's Liverpool's.
Yeah, the race is very much alive, Reggie. Great to see as well. We probably didn't predict that Spurs would beat Man City But they have been a bogey team for them over the last probably two or three seasons, and it was a huge result. Harry Kane obviously playing brilliant, and it sets it up lovely for all the neutrals, because we did want to see some sort of a title race. I thought we would all along. Then when City were pulling away, you're thinking, will we see one at all? But the fact that Liverpool, I suppose, played really well during January, kept on their coattails, won their games in hand. Now they have obviously back in their own hands, because if they win against City, they'll be back level, and they have more goals scored as well. So that's going to be a cracker when they play each other. But I can't see both of them going unbeaten till the end of the season. Either. I think other clubs might take points off. I think we're in for a really good end to the season now with both those teams.
Eamon Dunphy Poole, that's what we're going to be calling him from now on, you know.
he once said to me, Ken, right, we were having a chat like this on one of the shows, and I was going on about Guardiola, obviously, when he first came into the league and how good he was.
He's not a good manager.
he struggled in the first season, and he turned around to me after a few weeks and says, Alan, you fell in love with the wrong guy, baby.
typical. That Michel Platini, he is not a good footballer.
That's some photo as well on social media, yourself, Eamon, and Georgie, Ken. Reggie, I don't know what...
That's me with the beard. In disguise, I'm in disguise, Alan.
Some photo.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Some photo. Sure. He's always rubbing shoulders with all the superstars, Ken, you know. he even went so far, Eamon, as to say that he feels Liverpool are the standout team for the Champions League now at this stage, even, you know, it goes that far.
Load of crap.
Yeah, well, when you look at them, Reggie, I suppose it'll be them or City again, because Bayern Munich have been very hit and miss this season. You look at Borussia Dortmund losing to Rangers as well, so yeah. And they're only hot on the heels of Bayern Munich, so you might question just where the Bundesliga is at the moment. And then when you look around Europe with the other teams, PSG probably might put it up to them as well, one of the English clubs, but after that I think they're struggling really. So yeah. Even Chelsea I would give a chance to on a given day in a cup tie. I know they're not going to win the league, Chelsea, and their form is tailed off, but on a given day you'd give them a chance, but you'd have to fancy either City or Liverpool.
Man United are back, Alan. United are back. They pulled it out of the bag. King Ralph is at the wheel.
I wouldn't like to be on that bus.
No, it was a good result.
Yeah,
it was a good result.
They got away with it, didn't they? You know,
you never know with PSG now and the thing being moved to Paris. Yeah, that might give them a lift of a home
wishful
final.
Wishful thinking.
Well, yeah. Messi could be written in the stars for him, Reggie.
But Messi hasn't settled in there. I don't believe it myself as much as it would be great for my smallest lad. I don't think, I just don't see them doing it. I don't think PSG, they don't look convincing enough for me, but I'm not worried about the King Ralph bus either, though, Alan. I'm not worried about
Messi
that.
Messi went to Paris to see the Arc de Triomphe and the Eiffel Tower. Once he's saying that was it. He wants to go back to Barcelona straight away.
Yeah, he definitely does that.
He certainly doesn't look settled anyway there, does he?
No, not at all.
Who have you got podcast wise this week, Al?
So Chloe Mustaki is coming on, Irish international, and she has a brilliant backstory. Obviously she was diagnosed with cancer and recovered from that, then she did a really bad injury with her ACL, and she made her debut for Ireland last weekend, so she's a brilliant backstory. It'll be interesting to hear from her, and I'm looking forward to it. And the following week then we hoped that the billionaire Derry City chairman, we had a good few drinks with him last night, Reggie.
Is he Russian?
We coke. He sounded Russian at 3 o'clock this morning.
I'd say so.
Well, he was drinking vodka at 3 o'clock this morning.
A really good fella, and obviously he's putting huge investment into the club here as well. So yeah, we're looking forward to the next.
What's his connection there, Alan? Why Derry City? Was he a native of...
The team he supported, a local man, and obviously he did very well in the business circles, and he just felt the need then. He was on the board for a few years, and when they hit troubled times he was bailing them out, and then he just felt the need to take control, and he's passionate about it. Had a great chat with him now last night, really nice man. And as I say, things are certainly looking on the up here with Derry City, and it's been 25 years, Ken, would you believe, since Derry won the league. Like, we're a massive club.
I actually remember that one
time.
I can't believe it's 25 years now. That's the real.
I wasn't born then, so I don't know.
Yeah, you were off in Pele. You were too busy hanging out with Pele and Best and a few others. Six Nations weekend again. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Victor Costello. Morning, Vic. How are you?
Morning, Reg.
Morning, Victor. How are you?
Great, thanks.
How's
great,
that Spider-Man suit getting on?
Yeah. He's Batman, isn't he?
Do you know what? I didn't attempt to try it on. It's been a long while.
So we've moved on from Spider-Man and Batman. We were watching a bit of Superman and stuff last night in the RDS. It was it's interesting. Ken had a few of the Lions lads were staying in the Radisson Hotel this week with them, so he got chatting to them. But they didn't put up a bad performance in the end last night against Leinster. I thought they were going to get hammered, but they actually stood up fairly well. But I think Leinster would be disappointed with a lot of the mistakes that they made.
Yeah, it was a good game, actually. It's great to see them performing away from home for their own benefit. But, you know, the great thing about it was there were some great individual performances, because when you throw a team together like that, trying to blood new players or less experienced players in this window, to have the players perform, even though you're expected to win, even though it's kind of a no-win scenario for the individual and the team, but there are still yet really good performances. And that kind of mirrors what we hope against Italy tomorrow, the same. So, you know, players really just stand up, old and new, last night. So it was a hard-fought victory. Probably expected a higher score, but, you know, a win's a win in this competition, particularly an international weekend. As you know, it's hard for players that would be on the fringe of the squads, of the Irish squad, to kind of play these games. Mentally, it's a real tough task, because their contemporaries are, you know, in the hotel in Shelburne, wherever they might be, playing Six Nations matches, and you're playing this game, which, you know, is kind of lower key, less profile. So it's a good test to the mental strength of the individuals.
Absolutely. Okay, well, the big stuff this weekend is the Six Nations, as you mentioned, and a good test is probably the best way to introduce this section of the rugby as well, because in fairness to Andy Farrell, he has put in some players that, you know, media and other rugby pundits have been screaming out for. They've been asking for this type of a selection. So he's gone with Carberry at 10. He's gone with Robbie Henshaw and Ringrose in the centre combination. And he's given Michael Lowry an opportunity at full back. So is this a game where we'd expect Carberry? Is the honeymoon period after being injured over? Are we going to be expecting a big performance from him? And does he need one?
I think he does. I mean, I think the jury's still out with Carberry. There's two sides of the fence when it comes to Joey Carberry. I heard Liam Tolan mention during the week, you know, this is a second start, or it was a second start in the Six Nations. And that's great, because he played well against France in Paris. But the question is, why is it only his second start? And the reason is because he's injury prone. So this test, two games in a row, albeit a lesser, weaker side and at home comforts. So most of the people who are kind of on the fence regarding Carberry, like myself, would say, well, okay, this is another game. The metric, with the bar which Joey Carberry tends to set in the media is, if he lasts the game, it's a good thing, you know, and I don't think that's right. I think he needs, as Shane Horgan said it after the last game, when there was kind of a lot of comfort from a good performance out in Paris, you know, show me five games on the trot, and then you've got somebody who's got long-term longevity in them. It's hard for Sexton. It's great to see Sexton available and on the bench, and it's hard for him with his competitive nature to be sitting on the bench. So, you know, that's not a role he would like to play. But for Carberry, yes, he's got to keep this trajectory going in the right direction, even though against Italy at home.
Yeah, is this a case, Victor, where if it was against, like, England away, maybe Carberry wouldn't be starting? Is it the fact that it is Italy to say, give him a start, see how he gets on, like, a couple of games in a row, and we go from there?
I think it is, and I think, Ken, I think the hero of the Six Nations so far has been Andy Farrell.
Yeah.
I think he's managed this team really, really well. And not only, a lot of people were speaking about the debate, Carberry-Sexton, but he's also, you know, Larry fullback and other changes in the pack he's made. This is a guy who's thinking of the World Cup. We went into the World Cup in 2019 with a flogged best 15, and you mentioned Robbie Henshaw there, Reg. Yeah. Robbie Henshaw kind of dug the Irish spirit back in a game against Wales, where he pretty much injured himself going out to Japan, as was Carberry injured. So we had a lot of injuries going out there because we stuck with a 15 or maybe 17 to 20 players that were, you know, Joe's favourite and performed for him. We're now looking at a real big squad here a year out of the World Cup, and that is exactly what you want to be thinking. You take your chance. Yes, Ken, Twickenham's going to be a different animal altogether. You would need Sexton in for that one. But if Carberry gets another decent game under his belt, then his confidence is coming back for, again, his longevity. And the pundits and the fans and the coaches' confidence in picking him is rejuvenated as well. So it's a big game for him. But again, a tougher opposition. You look at that France game, if it was a World Cup match, you know, if it was World Cup match, World Cup stage, you know, would that performance, you need the extra, you need the front foot, you need the Johnny Sexton bite of the big game players. And I don't think he's there yet, but I think it's absolutely right, the correct decision to pick him for this game. And then maybe more games if he gets the chance to get those all-important run of games under his belt.
What happens, Victor, if Carberry goes out today and has an absolute cracker of a game, sets the world on fire, and we beat Italy by 50, 60 points? Does Farrell have to pick him for England?
No, and that's why I think Farrell is really doing well at the moment, because I don't think he's getting swayed by emotion. You know, the fact was, Carberry had a good game. He had a solid game in a tough environment. He deserves a second bite. And I think realistically, even if it was a 60-pointer, and it could well be, I mean, we are taking this Italy team for granted. You know, normally the first game of the tournament, they're up for it and they kind of drift off after that. And we're so good now that we can take it for granted and try new players. But I think no matter what he does today, I think Sexton will be selected, because we need to win the Six Nations. We need the Six Nations to be won. And he ain't better than Sexton. So it's tough for Sexton to sit on the bench, but it'll be good mileage under the belt of Carberry for the wider picture and the squad. For example, if Sexton goes down in Twickenham in the first 20 minutes, you're not going to have to test Carberry, because at that stage, hopefully, he'll be already tested.
It's interesting. The bookies have sort of picked Ireland as 40-plus points to beat Italy. I actually don't see that, because I think Italy under massive pressure at the moment. There's so much talk around them being in the Six Nations. There's signs, I mean, certainly defensively, I felt Italy at times have been good against oppositions they've been up against. They've been able to tackle, and they've made it awkward for teams to score against them. I'm not saying for 1 minute that they won't, that they would beat Ireland. But given all the changes that you have, and some inexperience, really, you know, when you look at the likes of Ryan Baird and Lowry and even Hansen on one wing, there is still inexperience there in certain positions. I don't see us hammering Italy for some reason tomorrow. I think we'll get the job done, but I don't see us absolutely wiping the ground with them.
No, it depends on a lot of factors. I mean, obviously the bounce of a ball in rugby and the weather, and obviously there is pressure on the new players coming in. But if you take a leaf out of Leinster book last night, some of those individual performances, you know, were outstanding. And I think the likes of Lowry, I think Baird, they just need to follow on from their provinces. And I think the standard of the provincial performances so far has been good. They have opportunity here. Italy's not going to be a huge test for these players. So literally keeping their momentum, their confidence in their play, doing the same thing that got them selected in the first place, should solidify that squad. I mean, you have to think, Reg, at this stage, you need to put a lot of points in Italy. Yeah. And yes, it's a no hope for players. Like, if you know, if they do it, they can't win. If it's a big point, if it's a narrow victory but still a victory, then they're under pressure, et cetera, et cetera. But these are a professional team. We have professional ambitions. And the World Cup looming, we know we've been in many World Cups where we haven't got by a quarterfinal. Next year is the big challenge. And if you're going to be thinking about next year, you've got to put away Italy confidently with a good team performance, and also those young, experienced players rising to the occasion.
If you were in Farrell's like shoes, like, you know, you've got Farrell's head on, what would you be looking for today or tomorrow, you know, against Italy? What would you be looking for from your players?
I'm looking for a really strong performance. You'd probably have to come back from the Paris game and go, well, what let us down? And obviously the breakdown, we were bullied at the breakdown. So, I mean, it wouldn't be that hard for the Italian team to be thinking tonight, let's put Ireland under pressure at Rooks. Now, if you've got the back line who are eager and young, they're going to want to get quick ball. So you're going to try and slow that eagerness down.
Yeah, yeah.
So we could trip up easily at the breakdown. So that's an area that we have to improve. The set pieces we've got to improve. The Italian, the scrum we've got to improve. So as Reg says, they will come at us. These are still an international side. But we have a momentum. I mean, you got to look at the players that have been left on the bench. You've got Cone on the bench. You've got Sex on the bench. In our day, if you were dropped, you took it as a personal insult. You know, whereas nowadays, these players have to realise that when you don the jersey, responsibility to perform as the last person did, because you might not have it next time, no matter, even if you're a man in the match like Carberry could well be. So I think from Andy Farrell's point of view, he needs to see faith in the selection, faith in the people he's put in, the Baird, Larry. They're not better than Keenan. They're not better than James Ryan. But this time next year, we could have a problem where we have injuries and we need to build our squad and have confidence in other players. So I think he's really looking at the performance about us. A, did we learn something from the game in Paris about our breakdown? We did tidy up some areas, but also put this team away. And if we don't put the team away, if we don't put Illy away in the first 20 minutes, how are we going to deal with it? We're under pressure. The crowd are getting bored. What is happening here? Who's not playing? How do we deal with it? It's like in Paris, an early try. How do they dealt with it? They dealt with it very well. So there's a lot of aspects to this game, mentally, particularly more than physically. But I think this, again, you know, I reiterate, I think Andy Farrell's doing really, really well. And when he's picking teams like this and having faith in players, the players then have faith in the coach. Yeah. Whereas I think the Joe Smith era at the end, the last year, became really stale. And there was a lot of friction there, a lot of burnout. And I think some players are only now rejuvenating themselves, like Robbie Henshaw and to probably a lesser extent Conor Murray, you know, only recovering from that era of being somewhat one-dimensional and not being able to think in the pitch. Whereas quite obvious, these players are able to think, and there is a lot of faith given to them, a lot of freedom given to them. So I think people are, you know, a happy team, a happy coach, happy dressing room, and normally the victories happen after that as well.
Victor, just to move on a little bit, the other team that we'll be watching very carefully is France. They take on Scotland today in Scotland. Now, we will desperately be hoping that Scotland can do us a favour. Scotland were poor against Wales. They were good in their opening match, but they were poor against Wales and didn't really perform. But they're back at home. We know how precarious the French are, you know, are travelling. They just don't like it. Is there a chance of a Scottish upset, do you think?
I think there's definitely a chance of a Scottish upset. And if you put ourselves in the French shoes, they've been the aspirations towards World Cup or world dominance. They've got to beat Scotland in Edinburgh. And, you know, that's a tough task in any day. The Scots are a very proud nation. They're a good side. There have been better sides in the past and there have been worse sides more recently. But they're a good side at the moment. And they're probably not playing well, but they also play with a lot of passion. And I think they could cause the upset. And as you mentioned, Edge, it is also hard mentally for a side playing on Sunday because the players are going to be watching that match today going, well, where does that leave us? If they do lose, it's all to play for. It's maybe a little bit of struggle. You know, England could have a performance as well, you know, which puts a bit of pressure on for 2 weeks' time. So, you know, this is the great thing about the Six Nations. There will be upsets. You know, we're talking about upsets, you know, with a game against the League Minnows tomorrow. I'm not suggesting that could be an upset, but you got to make sure that you're not the upset.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, hopefully it'll be, you know, Scotland taking down France, which I can see happening because, you know, they do play with pride there. As I said last week, England have a game in them too, and we're hoping that game isn't in Twickenham 2 weeks. So, you know, it's all to play for, but you got to keep focused on the job in hand and see where everything is on Monday. And then, you know, as I said, there's a nice 2 week break before the next one.
And then England, as you mentioned, they don't look like the powerhouse they once were. And at home to Wales, you'd expect them to get that job done. But it's not a foregone conclusion either. Wales have been written off by everybody and they come out in the last round and prove everybody wrong, as Wales are wont to do. So that's going to be another good match, I think, that one, a good head-to-head between those two.
Definitely. I think England are on the ropes. I think Eddie Jones under a lot of pressure. So this is a real test for them at home to get their show back on the road. I don't think Wales have the firepower. Again, another proud nation, particularly against England. I don't think they have the firepower. I think this might be the start of England coming good, this Six Nations, which could be trouble for us. Mm. But nevertheless, Wales, every team, no matter how bad it's going, particularly Wales in the history, I mean, Wales have taken down potential Grand Slam victories after being the worst team of the competition, you know, when it comes, particularly England, when it comes to playing against England.
Yeah.
So, you know, if this game was later down the track, it would be a belter. But I just don't think the Wales have the firepower to beat England at home. And that is a potential, that's more of a game to watch for me than the French Scotland one.
GAA with Declan Drake on Dublin's Talking Sport.
Good morning and welcome to our weekly look at the Dublin GAA scene. The only place I suppose to start is Croke Park last Saturday and the Dublin footballers' third consecutive reversal in the 2022 Alliance National Football League Division 1 campaign. The 5-point defeat to Mayo means it's now 4 league and championship games without a win for Desi Farrell's Blues, who thanks to this latest reversal are anchored to the foot of the table. The Na Fianna clubman, now in his third year at the helm of the Blues, spoke to me in the Croke Park media room post-match and began by offering his assessment of what he had just seen.
Oh, we're disappointed with the second half. I thought we did a lot of things right in the first half. Conceded two goals, you know, that you just can't afford to be conceding at this level. But definitely the first half was much more positive from our perspective. Second half, not so much. And, you know, we're in a certain situation at the minute, and all we can do is keep working hard and keep trying to learn from previous performance, take it one game at a time. We look at the tape again and figure out what we were doing wrong, what we were doing right, and try and bring those learnings with us the next day. I was playing Sean for sure. As I say, we can't look at that. We just look at it a case by case, game by game, and you know, almost to the point of training session by training session and day by day. You know, if you get caught up in the pressure of league points and, you know, the struggle for survival or whatever it is, it doesn't lend itself to the types of performances we want. You know, it's we're not concerned about the pressure. We have a plan, and it's a bigger picture around trying to be really, really competitive come the summertime, while introducing the new players that we have been through the league, and getting it to a point that we've those younger lads properly immersed and embedded in the squad, and remaining really, really competitive, and that's the name of the game for us. A combination of both. You know, obviously Mayo are really well set up, well organised, in great peak physical condition, and are on a trajectory that's set to continue for them, I've no doubt with that, you know. So we're lagging behind a little bit in that regard, so we know we have work to do. There's, you know, some of the younger players, it's a big step up, and there's a lot of learning for them to, you know, understand systems, game plans, that type of thing. But they're trying really, really hard. They're real keen and eager, which is great to see. The attitude is spot on, and, you know, to be fair, the senior players have been great to embrace so many new players into the squad, and you know, obviously they're great teachers in their own right. So overall, we're very happy with the dynamic and what everyone is bringing to the table. It's just the performances haven't been where we'd like them to be, probably lacking a little bit of cohesion at the minute. But, you know, I'm very optimistic that'll come, and it has to come. Yeah, of course, that's a challenge for them. And it's also a challenge for the senior players, who are probably find themselves in uncharted territory as well, you know. But what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And I think that's the approach we have to take. There's great opportunity to learn and grow in this period, you know, because this is something new. And definitely some of our senior players are out of their comfort zone, having to deal with this type of a situation, these circumstances. But, you know, they're taking it on the chin, and nobody's feeling sorry for themselves, and it's all about getting back out into practice ground and working on the areas that we need to improve on. Yeah, we're hoping over the coming weeks that more and more of these players will be coming back to us, and you know, at that point in time we'll see a real bit of competition for starting 15 place, even the 26 for match day. Will be step up a gear as well, and that's what you need, you know. Obviously you need the injection of those senior players and some of the younger lads getting up to speed with this and the level it's at, and really getting a comprehensive understanding of what's required at the intercounty scene. And if we can marry those two together, we'll be much more formidable than we have been to date.
Good news there for Dublin was the return of Johnny Cooper of Na Fianna and Mick Fitzsimons of Coola to the Blues jersey. The Dubs, by the way, are away to Kildare tomorrow afternoon. Throw-in for round four of the league is at 1:45 in St Conlett's Park, Newbridge. By the way, this is a sell-out game, so the advice would be to stay away if you don't have a ticket. It's one of three away trips that remain for Dublin. The other two are to the north, Tyrone, the All-Ireland champions at Omagh, and Monaghan in Clonus. The final home game at Croke Park is on Sunday, March the 20th, against Donegal. to ladies' football now, and far better news from Mick Bones. Lidl National Football League Division 1 champions Dublin made it 2 from 2 and booked their place in the last four of this season's competition with a very impressive 2-13 to 2-3 win over old foes Cork, who were very disappointing on the night, you'd have to say. Hannah Tyrrell of Nafina top scored with a goal and 9, while Nicole Owens of recently crowned intermediate All-Ireland Queens St Sylvester's got the other one. Well, after the game, I took the opportunity to speak to Dublin selector Paul Casey.
Yeah, look, it was a good workout. I think it's still early stages for both teams out there. We're trying new things. Cork are obviously new manager, trying new things as well. But I suppose the early goal, kind of the game can run away from you after that going in. And luckily we got that early goal, and I think we got a stronghold on the game for a while. But then, you know, it got scrappy, so lots to work on still.
Having Nicole Owens back in the squad is a real breath of fresh air.
Nicole brings a load of experience. She's had a great campaign with Sylvester's as well, so it's great to have her competing for a place in the team. And there's lots of players around there who are, you know, they make it difficult for girls to get back into that forward unit. But that's what we want. We want to try and create as much competition all over the pitch as possible, and it's important for the girls when they do get a chance that they put their hand up. I mean, ultimately we want to create a strong panel, and it's up to the girls when they get a chance. They have to show that they're ready for this level, and lots of them did very well.
That's the end of our football section for this week. We turn our attention now to the small ball game, where our two flagship teams both face road trips today. Dublin's senior Camogie team, beaten by the All-Ireland champions Galway in Grange Gorman last Saturday. They play an Offaly team that were beaten by Tipperary indeed in their first game last week as well. Our regular hurling analyst Sean Lane is with us once again in the programme this morning. Good to see you, Sean. Welcome back to the programme. Disappointing for the girls against Galway last week. They're playing against an Offaly team who lost themselves last week in their first game. So something has to give this afternoon in the fateful county.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And good morning to you, Declan. Look, Dublin weren't good last week. They were beaten 115-6 points, and the Galway crowd were out there, Sarsfield contingent. But equally, the Offaly result was, I think, was 421-15, so there was a right beating. The Camogie League, the way it's structured, there's three top teams in Camogie at the moment. You've got Cork, you've Kilkenny, and you've Galway. And in the Dublin section, they only have the Galway, where the other two are on the far side. But Tipperary are making huge strides, and they're the team that beat Offaly out the gate. Dublin have a great chance of winning this on Sunday, and manager Adrian O'Sullivan and Donny Fox is coaching them, who as we all know, is the man behind the Jude success. So if they have them right, I think Dublin have a great chance on Sunday, where, to be fair, last week we didn't give them much of a chance. But they're a young side and they're improving, and look, we have to stick with them, and let's hope they get across the line.
Yeah, game is this afternoon at 12:30 down there in Drumcullen. And we wish Adrian and the crew every success in their attempt to get off the mark in the Littlewoods Ladies National Camogie League. Hurling now, and for the second game in a row, the Capital Stickmen are on the road in Division 1B of the Allianz National Hurling League. Last time out, it was Antrim in Belfast. Destination this afternoon, Tom Semple's Field, better known as Semple Stadium in Thurles, for a clash with Tipperary, who indeed are at home for the second consecutive round of this league. The Blues travel south with 3 points from their opening two games, thanks to a draw against Waterford and that fine victory over Antrim recently, 2 weeks ago in fact, up in Belfast. An unbeaten run in 2022, 6 games, 5 of them wins, and that's a stat alone, Sean, that means confidence will be high amongst the Blues faithful travelling to Semple Stadium this afternoon.
Yeah, Declan, definitely. I mean, we had an interview there before the Waterford game, and we were both confident, and anybody I spoke to, we were confident that we'd have put up a good show against Waterford. And, you know, I was disappointed we didn't win the game on the day, but we got a result. I see the exact same on this evening. I think that the big pitch suits Dublin. I've seen what Dublin have done, certainly to Wexford in the Walsh Cup final. The bigger pitch suited them. So I think we're in for another belter of a game, and all of these games have to really add to Dublin's kind of experience, passion, getting ready for the championship.
It's all about building blocks, and there are some very positive ones throughout the Walsh Cup campaign and the National League campaign so far as well. But there's no doubt about it that today is a serious step up in class. No disrespect to some of the teams that they've played already this year, going down to Semple Stadium to face the home team under Colin Bonner.
Yeah, it definitely a step up, and I suppose it's a step up from the perspective that Colin Bonner, as we alluded to previous weeks, that he's a new manager in, he's trying out new players, everybody's trying for a spot. If you just look at the Tipperary team, Declan, the last day that just got across the line against Kilkenny, you had Seamus Callaghan, you had John McGrath, you had Ronan Marr, and you had Paddy Goodell in the subs. So, like, you know, that's not a bad subs bench to bring in. If the Dublin footballers had a bench like that at the moment, we'd be a lot further up on the improvement card. But look, he's accumulating a very, very good squad there. He's had a great result against Kilkenny. On the other side, you know, we've done nothing wrong. As you said, we've played six games. We've won five of them. We've beaten, and let's go through some of these. We've beaten Wexford fairly comprehensively in the Walsh Cup final. They've gone after us and won two games, including beating Limerick. We beat Galway as well in the Walsh Cup, and they went on afterwards and beat Limerick as well and won their two games. So, you know, what's the form? We don't know. But I do believe the next two league games, this evening against Tip and the following week against Kilkenny, there'll be two massive games for Matty. If you get two results there, we know where we are. If we don't win the two of them, we've a bit of work to do. And if we won one and lost one, do you know, that mightn't be the bad place to be. You'd have a little bit of improvement. But you'd know, the one thing you'll know about Kilkenny, they'll always be trying. This Tipperary team will really be trying. So you'll know exactly where you are at the end of the next 2 weeks. And I think we're in a good place.
A difficult situation for Colin Bonner, because obviously he wasn't the first choice, it would appear, for the position at that particular time. So fair play to him for stepping into the breach, the good Cashel Kincormac's club man there. We have our own manager, Matty Kenny, of course, a bit further down the line in terms of his managerial career in Dublin. This is year four. We've spoken extensively about it since the turn of the year. But at this stage of the year, February, heading into the month of March, he has to be quietly content with the way the project is developing this year.
There's no doubt, Declan, and I know I've said this on the programme before, that you know, every year he's improved. But where he is at the start of the year, and I've named these fellas before, and I know you'll be hammering me on the goalie, but we've two smashing goalies. And
which one?
We could pick whichever one you want.
That's not what we pay you the big bucks for, Sean. This is more Micah Richards than Roy Keane.
We could play one the first half, Declan, and the other one the second half. There are two smashing goalies, and I'm comfortable with whichever decision Matty makes on that. But if you take the backs, we've Dara Gray, Keane O'Callaghan, Owen O'Donnell, James Madden, Paddy Smith. Like, they're five smashing backs. Middle of the park, we've no issues at all. We can play Rian McBride. We can play young Burke, Conor Burke from Vincent's as well, and you know, Chris Crummy's been played there. And up front, like, you have Danny Sutcliffe and Donald Burke. They're as good a half forwards, I think, as in the country. And inside, there's an ever improving young man there in Fergal Wheatley. But if Ronan Hayes and Eamon Dillon hit form, I'm after including the goalies there and the two or three midfielders. I'm after naming 13 or 14 or 15 really, really good hurlers there. We haven't had that in a long time. And I know that what Matty's looking at, there's three or four. I mean, Paul Crummy got a great goal up in Antrim the last day in Corrigan Park. I know young Dillon did all the hard work in the corner, but he got it back. But he took it well and stuck it away. So, you know, Matty could have 22 or 23 players as, you know, as championships progress. You're going to have a couple of injuries and all that. But I think we've people in reserve now, which is a really good place to be. I know it's only February, but it's the end of February. But remember, championship starts a lot earlier now and it's round robin. So I think Matty's in a really, really good position in relation to the whole.
Thanks for listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken and Reggie. Have a good weekend.